He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Tuesday. It is Tuesday, February the 3rd, the gold rebound edition and silver of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, and I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst. We have a mixed market today as the NASDAQ is sinking by 200 and the Dow is rising by 220 right now. The Dow is at 49,626, almost at 50,000, just 374.16 points away from 50,000. The NASDAQ, on the other hand, down 207. I'll have to look and see who the culprit is, or there may be a couple of them. The NASDAQ is at 23,385. The S&P up 3. It's basically flat on the day, 69.79 today only. Russell 2000 up 0.9%. The big news today is in the precious metals markets. Gold up 6.03%. Didn't we say we were still bullish gold yesterday, Barry? Yes, we did. And it is rebounding by 6%. Silver's up 12.7%. I'm a little bit not committed to silver. It's too volatile for me. Crude oil is up 80 basis points. And even Bitcoin. No, Bitcoin is down. It's under 80,000, 77,000. Not good. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show on this Tuesday, February the 3rd. 2026. It's been my observation over the years that silver is really unpredictable. Yes, it does trade pretty much in parity with gold, but there's times when it does not. And when it does not, it gets to be a very wild thing, which we witnessed here recently. You had just incredible rise in silver. And then the 28% collapse on Friday. And I've witnessed silver over the years, and I've just decided, other than some silver dollars, you know, that I keep hidden around somewhere in Charleston, I avoid silver and silver stocks. It's way more volatile. I have to believe, Barry, that the silver market is smaller than the gold market. And therefore, more manipulation takes place from time to time. That's just been my observation. And so for that reason, I avoid silver. But yesterday, you know, we gold got caught up in the silver sell-off. And yesterday, both Barry and I discussing on the air here, on the public airwaves, that we're still bullish on gold. And gold, yeah. You know, you had a shot. It got down to 4,800. Yesterday, and Barry, you're seeing today 4,933. It's up 6% today.
Well, and I think it's, you know, as you mentioned, historically they do trade in kind of a ratio or in parity together. But you know, it's really been, as we said, it's really kind of two separate stories. It's easy to pull them both together because they're both, you know, shiny metals, but I think, like we said, the continued, you know, tailwind for gold, I think, is, you know, remains in place. You know, to me, part, you know, silver, yes, as you mentioned, that parabolic rise, it's, you know, part of it is an anomaly in terms of just a mismatch in when some futures contracts needed to be settled in actual silver. That silver was a crunch around the globe to get that silver where it needed to be, and that's what, you know, that's what happened. That's why you see that price move so fast.
Yes, and, you know, I mean, if you're a trader and you like trading, you like volatility. You like things that are very volatile and can make big moves. Problem is, they make big moves both ways, up and down. So it's too wild for me, silver. But like I say, I mean, you just look around the world at, well, you look at the U.S. with our debt, and 33 trillion? I lost track. It was 33 trillion last time I looked. And we continue to spend a trillion more than we take in, even under Trump. He's doing what he can to narrow the gap, but you're not going to narrow the gap until you start digging into Social Security and Medicare and all the things that are very difficult, very, very difficult to change. And in the meantime, I think you still have can make a bullish case for gold. Now, I cannot make a bullish case for, and never have been able to, for crypto. And Bitcoin is really showing its true colors again here. It's under 80. It's at 77,000. It's not participating in the rebound in the precious metals. There is a big divergence between crypto and precious metals. They have not ran together at all. And that's kind of troubling. Now, I'm finding the culprits here. The NASDAQ is down 200. You know, PayPal's a dog. PayPal is a big dog
down,
of a stock.
Down big today, too.
Yeah. It's down 18%. Software remains weak. Intuit is down 7.8%. And then you got Micron down 4.9%. ASM, the chips are selling off just a little bit here today. But it's mostly PayPal, Intuit, and Synopsys also down 7.5% here today. Other than that, you know, we're having a good day because our gold holdings are carrying us much higher here today. So that's where we start on this Tuesday. Where did we end yesterday? And we've also got a lot of earnings that have come in overnight and this morning to get to. And an interesting story out of Tesla. We're starting to see inside Musk's vision of this data centers in outer space. And, you know, there was a factor that I didn't factor in, that I didn't realize. His claim is that you have unlimited access to solar in outer space. Okay, so I guess by the time it goes through the Earth's atmosphere and all this and that, we can only squeeze so much out of solar. But it sounds to me like before it hits the Earth's atmosphere, those satellites and whatnot and data centers, he makes the case that that would be the cheapest form of energy and have those data centers circling, orbiting the Earth using solar power from the sun, which is much more powerful outside of our atmosphere, Barry. That's an interesting concept.
I'm certainly no astrophysicist, but I was thinking, from the movies, I hear space is cold too, right? So I wonder if if you don't have as much
air condition,
issues in terms of heating, maybe. I mean, I'm not sure, but it sounds like it would make sense. But we'll see. I mean, he's they're combining. You know, we've just combined, so now we're combining, SpaceX with XAI. Supposedly, right, SpaceX is going to go public later this year and has already been, and this deal was valued at I think it was $1 trillion, and I think the XAI portion was valued at $250 billion, so... it'll be interesting to see where this goes.
Yeah, and there's talk of it all being one big tech platform at some point in time, including Tesla in it, and basically having control over the land and the air. So anyways, he's got a massive vision. It goes way beyond Edison. That's all I know. Way beyond Ford, Henry Ford. to build a million satellites, that would take an assembly line much like the one in Dearborn or the one in Detroit. Anyways, yesterday gold and silver stabilized. Okay, that was a good sign. And that just shows you when they go into free fall like they did on Friday, they have intrinsic value, and that puts a floor in underneath them, that intrinsic value. And that's what, for me, crypto lacks. As a guy that's watched the markets for 26, 27 years now, I just don't see that floor in crypto where it hits some kind of intrinsic value, that puts in a floor underneath it. And that's the part that scares me about crypto. And I don't like the way it behaves when it's under duress. How would crypto have done in 2008 and 2009 when we had the financial meltdown? I mean, we'll never know until we have the next financial meltdown, probably brought about by private credit and private equity and all this kind of stuff. It doesn't seem to be hold up very well under duress.
Well, I mean, the one thing we know is in the last, handful of months, it's gone from 125,000 to 77?
Is
it trading at 77 today? I mean, that's, you're talking about 48,000, right, from 125. That's a 38% drop. I mean, that's a huge haircut.
And what is there to point to as intrinsic value, okay? Well, when we come back, J.P. Morgan's got their view on gold. We gave our view on gold yesterday, and our view on gold reiterated this morning. And there's a huge trade deal that happened yesterday, late in the day. This is the Best Stocks Now show. We'll be right back. Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Gold's longer-term investment case intact despite pullback, says J.P. Morgan. Well, somebody at J.P. Morgan. I don't think J.P.'s with us anymore, but their analyst says that they have a target price of $6,300 on gold. I don't know how you set a target price on gold. I mean, they're way more into it than I am. It takes a very special analysis of world banks, reserves under. I mean, it's very, very complicated.
Even world customs. I mean, you have Chinese New Year. You've got gift giving season in India that affect demand for gold. So there's a plethora of different influences that involve the price of gold.
Well, they're crediting optimism for the metal at some major banks. That's one of the things they're crediting. He says the dust is yet to settle from last week. It did not derail our structural bullish view on gold. The long-term rally in gold has not and will not be linear. For now, we once again digest, reset, and repeat. So they say the rally will resume. And they see $6,600 per ounce in 2020, by the end of 2027, actually. Okay, I thought that was this year. UBS analyst Giovanni Stavano said he looks for gold to reach a new record high above $6,200 later this year. And Deutsche Bank reiterated its gold price forecast of $6,000 this year, citing sustained investor demand. Well, I mean, at $4,800, it's got 25% upside potential if you can, if these analysts are anywhere in the ballpark of where gold is headed. But suffice it to say, they remain bullish on gold. The latest trade deal between the U.S. and India is a limited pact, but it cuts U.S. tariffs on many Indian imports by roughly 18%. And I saw that the Indian market was up like 3 or 4% this morning.
Yeah, I think I saw something where maybe they had the biggest move in a day, or maybe that's actually Korea. I think Korea had a big move in Samsung with probably has to do with the memory chips.
Yes, and with India, it was India kept buying Russian oil.
Yeah.
And that was a real thorn in the side because it's Russian oil sales that's financing the war for the most part against Ukraine.
And they were getting a great price, too. That's the other thing is, I mean, they were getting a pretty sizable discount by buying their gold.
We all like a great price, but, having Russia deliver it through the back door and then turning around and buying weapons to crush Kyiv with, they're probably not that good. So anyways, that's a big deal for India. And, you know, there were some hard feelings there that they had to work through between us and their leader. We've got Pfizer has reported. Disney's got a new CEO. Don't let the door hit you on the way out, Bob Iger.
Yeah, well, apparently Bob's going to be around for a while mentoring him until
he's a great mentor. You know, that's like a 193 batter mentoring, you know, Aaron Judge or something like that. I don't know.
You might have to be careful because, you got to be careful with him being a mentor. He might take his job back, you know.
Yeah, I know. He did that with the other guy. And, you know, look, I mean, I'm sure he has tremendous management people skills and knows how to run an operation, but he produced nothing for the shareholders in 10 years. And as a publicly traded company, I mean, I just think that's not good. That's inexcusable. The shareholders are paying, in a way, you to produce results, and he produced terrible results. And speaking of terrible results, we'll get to Pfizer a little bit later. That's time for a change at Pfizer. Alberto Borla has done, other than the vaccine, which is a one-hit wonder, and it's still a questionable one-hit wonder, that has been a horrible stock. PayPal's been a horrible stock. Merck has reported, that's a horrible stock. Pepsi, yeah, very soggy. And one of our holdings produce some good results on the tech front. Tonight we're going to get AMD. That will be very interesting. AMD is usually a flip of the coin, but it usually comes up heads. Usually. She's a crackerjack CEO.
She's pretty good on the call. So she's pretty good on the analyst call. And so I'm sure she'll be she's sharp as a tack. The trick is what, you know, what's the outlook, and what do they see going forward?
And are they catching up with NVIDIA? That would probably be another one. And Google's going to report tomorrow. Man, they got a lot of irons in the fire, and most of them are on fire right now. Their AI, Gemini 3, their chip for Meta. I mean, it goes on and on at Google with all the right things that they have done. There's a good CEO, Bob Iger, that's produced tremendous results for the shareholders and continues to grow and innovate. That's the key, okay? And then on Thursday, we're going to get Amazon. Boy, I see Amazon. I don't know. I'm ordering stuff that says same day. I get it like 3 or 4 days later. I know there's been some ice on the roads and whatnot, but it just seems like they're very disjointed there at Amazon. It's a good thing they have the AWS. I think that pretty much props up the whole company.
Yeah, at least, I mean, that's, you know, basically, you know, half of a good bit of the company's growth, and, you know, half of the revenue have been coming from AWS.
Yeah. And then, of course, on Friday, Philip Morris. You know, smoking's not good for your health. It's also not good for your portfolio, despite the big dividend yield. Juicy dividend yield that it sports to suck you in. You know, just like the cowboy used to suck you
that's
in.
That's a finance term, juicy dividend, right?
Yeah, that's a seeking alpha term. You can retire on the dividend. Anyways, okay, when we come back, I just want to delve a little bit into this whole SpaceX announcement that they're acquiring XAI, which is Grok, right? It sees mixed reactions from analysts, some pondering the benefits and challenges, while others wonder about the future of Elon Musk's car company, Tesla. And I'm of the opinion if Tesla is left alone by itself, I think Tesla is kind of a slowing, decaying business, really. I mean, the sales are going the wrong way on Tesla. But I think that at the same time, I think that Musk is very loyal to the Tesla investors. And will figure out a way. I mean, he already put some of the AI company into Tesla. But could this become one big conglomerate at some point? That's what Wedbush is suggesting. A little bit more on that when we come back.
Don't understand anymore. Well, the top brass don't like him talking so much, and he won't play what they say to play.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. Something in the air. Well, there's been something in the air, you know, since I was a child, really. There's always something. And I would just say that I've been a witness, an eyewitness to most everything that's happened in the technological revolution, really beginning with Intel and semiconductors and the mainframe computers going to the PC into individual homes, and then from there going right on down to our little phones. And in between you had the internet, you had .com, the phone revolution, you've had the car revolution. I would say the two that we are witnessing, right? And, of course, there's been massive money-making opportunities in all of these revolutions, technological revolutions. And the two that are going on right now, Barry, seem to be AI, number one, which is happening on the ground. And number two is space and what's going on in space. And that's why this is intriguing, you know, Musk's combination of SpaceX and XAI, thinking about it, you know, how it could play in. He's making the argument that the best source and the cheapest data center computing power will come from outer space because of the unlimited access we have to the sun. Now, analysts note that Musk believes that the future of AI is in space due to infinite access to solar. However, the reality is that this brings substantial challenges in terms of power budgets, thermal budgets, maintenance, and likely will result in legal complication. Now, this comes from the engineering side of the spectrum that always says you can't do it, right? That seems to be more of the engineer's type of a mentality.
How big is a space data center? I mean, if it's falling out of orbit, does it burn up before it hits the ground?
Well, here's my side of the argument. SpaceX has acquired XAI to form the most ambitious vertically integrated, it'd be vertical all right, on and off the Earth with AI rocket-based internet, which we have now, space-based internet, direct-to-mobile device communications, and the world's foremost real-time information and free speech platform. That's Musk's view. That's his vision. This marks not just the next chapter, says Musk, but the next book in SpaceX and XAI's mission, scaling to make a sentient sun, to understand the universe, and extend the light of consciousness to the stars, Musk added. Now, I don't know if he's writing this while he's high on something. He usually delivers what he visions
he's
in his
visionary.
Head.
He's a visionary, all right.
Yeah. Well, yes, we're going to extend our light of consciousness to the stars. But now he gets into a little bit more of the nuts and bolts. He intends to establish space-based data centers. Well, that beats Wisconsin. I mean, nothing against Wisconsin, but that's a lot of land they're going to take up there, probably good farming land or whatever. and a lot of power from the citizens to run those data centers. He says the basic math is that launching 1 million tons per year of satellites. I thought it was 1 million satellites. It's 1 million tons.
Yeah, I heard somebody say 1 million satellites,
yeah,
too. Yeah, it's 1 million. Yeah, 1 million tons makes more sense to me, I guess.
Which would generate 100 kilowatts of compute power per ton. That would add 100 gigawatts of AI compute. Now we're getting way beyond Back to the Future. Of capacity annually with no ongoing operational or maintenance needs.
Well,
ultimately,
Yeah,
no, go ahead.
No, and that's what he's highlighting here is, I mean, I think the, you know, to me, we can get all wrapped up in all the stars and everything else. What he's trying to fix is he knows that there's going to be a power crunch, that the amount of compute,
right,
amount of compute that, that, you know, that we need or his company needs or everyone needs, I guess, think they need, there's not going to be enough power.
And he's banking on the
sun. Right, yeah. I mean, this is his solution.
It's a brilliant idea. You know, yes, the nuts and bolts are a little bit difficult, but we said, look, internet from space was a long time coming. There were a lot of false starts in satellite internet, a lot of bad. I tried one out a long time ago. It was horrible. Now it's great. I mean, I have Starlink at home. I go back and forth between the two. If I'm having difficulty with one, I can switch to the other. So I think it can be accomplished. He says there's a path to launching 1 TW per year. I don't know what the TW, trilowatts, whatever, a year from Earth said.
Yeah,
Musk.
The
we're
next
getting
level
beyond,
from
we're getting into quantum physics here. My estimate is that within 2 to 3 years, the lowest cost way to generate AI compute will be in space. Well, I mean, to run a data center, there's daily cost of the power. And if you've got the sun up there providing that power, that takes a big chunk of the cost. Now,
do you not need humans to, I mean, my whole thing is,
no,
too.
No, you do it all from the ground.
How do you operate the data center? Yeah, I guess.
You do it all from the ground. I mean, they're operating the internet from space, and they're operating all kinds of things. There are the phones now. Okay, now Wedbush, Dan Ives, weighs in. He noted that the combined company, this is just XAI and SpaceX right now, is expected to come in at $1.25 trillion. That's just incredible. And I see Walmart just hit a trillion. A much more boring company. But 1.25 is where they're thinking that this combination will come into being at 1.25 trillion, making it the largest tie-up across Musk Enterprises yet. Blah, blah, blah. Now, last week, this is where Tesla comes into this equation, maybe. Last week, Tesla said it will invest about $2 billion in the Grok chatbot maker. Musk had said during Tesla's earnings call that we just had, like, a lot of investors asking us to do this, as there's a lot of investors in Tesla, shareholders, who would like to invest in XAI, which you can. I mean, it's a private company. Unless you do it through, there's some ETFs and stuff that have exposure to it. But now if you own Tesla, you're going to get some exposure to it. Now, though, here's the most interesting part. This comes from Dan Ives at Wedbush. In our view, there's a growing chance that Tesla will eventually be merged in some form into SpaceX and XAI over time. The view is this: growing the AI ecosystem will focus on space and Earth together. And Musk will look to combine forces and technology over time. So anyways, I think I'm going to hang on to my Tesla stock. If you're just investing it thinking that it's just a car company, I think it's not a very good investment. But if he's going to keep combining it more and more with this big vision of combining space and AI, well, we'll see. Okay, the guys pulled it off. This now, let's go to a memory I have when he combined Tesla with Solar City. Solar City was sucking up cash and losing money.
And he was tied to his brother's company too, right? I mean, they were. I think his brother. I think he's in business with his brother with Sun City.
Yes, and he framed that all as we need to combine these two companies. Well, that's because Tesla was the cash cow, and the solar industry was burning money. A lawsuit eventually ensued that was won by Musk. Because the shareholders of Tesla were not happy. Solar City was eventually folded into Tesla Energy, which is the batteries and all this and that.
Yeah, Powerwall, some of the solar panels and the solar shingles.
So he's been known when he's had a troubled company like Solar City, and I would make the argument that Tesla is a bit of a troubled company right now.
Well, in XAI, I mean, XAI, he needs money.
There's no money coming in, really, unless
right. You're
a premium or business
yeah. Subscriber
to it, okay?
And
but
it already
he's able
has...
to go out and get the money from the
yeah. Investors,
so.
Yeah, the problem is it has enough, it's already saddled with a good bit of debt, and so, the cash cow right now, or the one with the highest valuation going forward that he has to tap is, like you said, is SpaceX.
So. Yes. So, well, I can see nothing wrong with using the cash coming in from Tesla sales and combine it all, because XAI right now is the cash burner, like you say, and he needs cash flow to continue to fund that. So, hey, I give the guy credit. My money's on Musk. We'll be right back.
You got to go where you want to go, do what you want to go.
Welcome back here to the final segment of the Best Now Stock Show. I'm going to go through three stocks here in this final segment of the show that have reported earnings today. The good, the bad, the ugly, or the good, the okay, and the ugly. Let's begin with Teradyne. That's a stock that we own, one of the chosen ones. I think we own 19 or 20. I bought three new stocks yesterday that I found that I've never owned before. Yes, one I have owned in the past. But one we picked up, a few months back, is Teradyne. I remember driving by Teradyne in Thousand Oaks when I lived in California for many years. Teradyne is involved in the semiconductor equipment company, sector. They manufacture IC test systems for the automotive, communications, consumer, computer, electronic game markets, very well diversified. And if you haven't noticed, chips are showing up everywhere these days, and, of course, in AI. Look at this quarter that Teradyne. Now, Teradyne's been around for a long, long time, but they have new life with AI. Their sales were up 44% year over year. That's the best quarter I can't remember the last time Teradyne had a quarter like that. You got to go back, I think, maybe 20 years or so. Their earnings were up 89%, so I think they have stamped themselves as a major player in today's tech world, and that stock is rocketing higher today. It's hitting a new all-time high, yes, $44 billion. It's up 12.3%. Today, TER, one of the stocks that we own in our Best Stocks Now Ultra Growth portfolio. Okay, the second one I want to mention is Palantir. We do not own any software stocks at the current time, and we asked the open-ended question yesterday, can Palantir lift the entire software sector, which is really sagging? I mean, really sagging. As I look at IGV, which is the chip or the software ETF, look at that chart again today, Barry. It's down another 4.28%. That thing's in a free fall. That's the software sector. And part of that is Intuit. Intuit is a software stock. Intuit is down. Let's see how much Intuit is down. Intuit is down 9.8%, 10%, and it's definitely a software stock. That's dragging it down. And the market leader, I mean, they had a good report. Their sales were up 70% year over year. Their earnings were up 79% year over year. Yet the stock is only up 4.4%, and it's fading. And it's fading fast. And the reason is very simple to point to, and it's the main reason. We sold Palantir for a very big profit. We sold it at $171 per share, which wasn't too far below its all-time high of $207.
And we think it's a company that has legs going forward. It's just we're, you know, valuation-wise.
The valuation is just too rich right now. It got ahead of itself. The P.E. is 197. That's against a growth rate of about 50-60. So you're trading at three times. You got a PEG ratio of three there. When Meta's at one, on the forward P.E. ratio, it's not much better. The forward P.E. ratio is 129. That's just too rich right now in this market with interest rates pushing higher today to 4.29. That hurts Palantir. So the market leader, this is the de facto market leader by far. I would say CrowdStrike is a distant second. I would say that Cloudflare would be there in the top tier, upper echelon, and a few others. But Palantir is only up 5.1% today. And like I say, it's fading fast. And that software sector continues to sag. My worry is it's going to spread to the NASDAQ. It is today for sure because the last time I looked, the NASDAQ was down 200. Despite stocks like Teradyne, Western Digital, Core, C-O-H-R, Seagate, having good day today. So the tech sector, it's all about which stock in the tech sector are you talking about, because a lot of them are sagging right now. And we'll close with Pfizer. Which is another great example of sogginess through and through. The ground is soggy outside right now. In some cases, it's still frozen. We still have frozen ground here in some cases. But in other places, I walked on the lawn. It was pretty soggy yesterday. I didn't get electrocuted or anything, but it was pretty soggy. I was carrying my iPhone in my hand and blah, blah, blah. I stay pretty much tech connected all the time. Pfizer stock, it's time for a change there. I saw two CEOs bite the dust today. One at Hewlett Packard. That stock's been a no-go player for a long time. Disney, obviously, that's been a no return. I say base their pay on the returns that they delivered to the stockholder. You'd have a lot more change at the top. Pfizer over the last 10 years, 3.7% per year, Alberto. 3.7. It's a massive skyscraper in New York City and Manhattan. You walk out of Grand Central Station, you look up in the sky, and there's this massive, reaches to the clouds, Pfizer. The stock is not reaching to the clouds. Even with the vaccine, that's a dismal return for a major drug company. 3.7, the S&P's 26, and over the last 5 years, you've lost 1% per year. Where are the activist investors on Pfizer, a company that has not delivered for shareholders whatsoever over the last decade? Okay, well, we're out of time. Houston filling up fast. Hey, that new commercial's got a little bit of a NASA twang to it, a little bit of a SpaceX sound to it. That's cool. And one of our listeners told us you got to go to the pit room when you're in Houston. So maybe Tuesday when I get there, I'll head on over to the pit room. And he gave us another one. I can't think of the name, but if you've got ideas, places I need to see while I'm in Houston, I have limited time on Tuesday to see the town, and you've got limited time on Wednesday and Thursday to see Gunderson and Barry in one-hour meetings, 855-611-BEST or GundersonCapital.com. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.